China is still going to win, even though it may not be for factories producing within China.
You will hear how that might happen in just a moment. This is Thursday, May 23rd, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. You are part of the program. You can join us on VOA Asia Facebook and take part. Also ahead, protest after the Indonesia election turned deadly. It appears as though Japan might have taken a major role in the South China Sea dispute. And many sports fans around the world are getting less sleep during Ramadan. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Increased tariffs to be imposed by the United States are expected to have a major impact on many of the products that China sells to the U.S. Although the apparel business was not on the list of tariffs placed on China by the U.S., it was on the recent list of tariffs that are set to increase to 25%. China has been the largest exporter of clothing to the United States. Other nations are expected to make efforts to fill the gap left by the higher-priced items from China. Among those nations, which include Vietnam, Cambodia, and India, perhaps a country that can take up much of the business is Bangladesh. I spoke with Dr. Marcia Dixon. She's professor at the Department of Fashion and Apparel Studies at the University of Delaware. She also co-founded and she runs the Better Buying Project, which was established to provide a meaningful effort to improve the social responsibility practices in the global apparel industry.
In countries like Bangladesh, Cambodia, apparel exports accounts for vast amounts of their GDP. I think I heard 70-80% in Bangladesh. So it's a huge, huge business. They want the business, of course. They want to be producing clothing for the U.S. With my Better Buying Initiative, I'm out there talking with suppliers all the time. Globally. And we've been hearing for well over 4 years, well before the Trump administration and the threats of tariffs to China, we've been hearing from suppliers about the need to move production out of China. And it wasn't simply because, the threat of, trade wars, but it was the costs of production. So, there's been a worker shortage and the costs of the wages are rising for Chinese workers. And so the Chinese have already been moving production out of China actively since, for at least 4 years. And on the directives of some of their retailer brand customers who are saying, basically, if you don't have factories outside of China, you're not going to get orders from us. And this is in an effort to reduce the cost of production. And so what you see is the Chinese are, the owners of many of the production facilities in Cambodia. In some cases, in Bangladesh. Now, Bangladesh still has a lot of local ownership as well. But, the Chinese have been moving production out of China for quite some time.
Is the quality of their apparel as good as is coming from China?
So, I think the funny thing is when you think about Vietnam and many parts of the world, that the clothing that's produced there is often produced for a parent company that's based in China, in Taiwan, in Hong Kong, or in South Korea. Almost all the, if not all of the Cambodian manufacturers are owned by companies or by companies outside of Cambodia. China is in a big way. And the same with Vietnam. There is Vietnamese ownership as well, but there's an awful lot of Chinese-owned manufacturing there. So, that's that talent of China is being passed on to countries like Vietnam. Interestingly, I think Bangladesh has had a little less foreign investment, but, there are Korean-owned, there are Chinese-owned facilities there. Bangladesh is still known for lower cost commodity production. But that's changing. It's just not changing quite fast enough to deal with the tariff situation.
What is this going to do to the safety of garment workers in a place like Bangladesh if they have to greatly expand what they are doing?
Right. And that's a real concern. I think, you know, since the Rana Plaza building collapse that killed over 1,100 people, you know, the country has really taken on a huge effort with the support of the branded retailers that purchase from Bangladesh to improve workplace conditions. And you have some beautiful factories in Bangladesh and definitely improvements. There's always more to improve. I'll be clear about that. But there has been great strides in worker safety in Bangladesh. Now, if you start thinking about trying to push more production there, you're going to see more of the peaks and valleys across time that really start to get factories and subsequently their workers into risk of noncompliance to codes of conduct related to overtime, related to unauthorized subcontracting, and various things like that, use of temporary labor. So I am worried that as we push too much on Bangladesh, they're going to start feeling what many other parts of the world have in terms of this up and down of production that is really hard to plan for and really hard to accommodate.
Overall, how much are these tariffs going to hurt China, and how much are they going to help a place like Bangladesh?
Well, you know, the protectionist trade measures of the past show us that a lot of countries can be helped. It never stopped production in China, and I don't think it will stop production in China now either. And ironically, because China still owns much of the global production around the world in different locations, it's still going to help China. China's still going to win, even though it may not be for factories producing within China. The companies that own factories around the world, many are Chinese, and they will continue to thrive. Now, nobody's thriving in this industry, however. Nobody's thriving. The retailers and brands, you know, it's every day is more news about store closures and the pressures on them, and the pressures are being pushed down the supply chain. So I think prices will have to rise.
Well, competition might have something to say about that, but if there's nothing, if they're up against a brick wall, I guess they can't. Now, what about if you could expand just a little bit on how much and how this will help a country like Bangladesh?
Yeah, so I think definitely Bangladesh is probably set to get more orders because of this of the tariffs, as more production is earmarked to be produced elsewhere. Bangladesh is well set to do that.
I spoke via Skype with Marcia Dixon, professor at the Department of Fashion and Apparel Studies at the University of Delaware. These are among the top stories you'll find right now on voanews.com. Taiwan's Navy has held a live fire exercise off the island's east coast in an area increasingly frequented by Chinese ships and planes. Four British and Japanese mobile phone companies are delaying plans to sell new devices from China's Huawei Technologies following a clampdown by the United States on the telecommunications giant. Philippine President Rodrigo Duterte's allies won a majority of the 12 Senate seats at stake in midterm elections, that according to official results shown Wednesday. Taliban insurgents detonated Wednesday a vehicle-borne bomb in eastern Afghanistan, killing at least three people and injuring 15 others. Expanded coverage of these stories and more on Facebook at VOA Asia and the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. Indonesian President Joko Widodo says he will not tolerate anyone disturbing the country's democratic process after deadly clashes between police and supporters of Prabowo Subianto, the former army general who lost the recent election but is contesting the results. Jakarta's governor said at least six people were killed, more than 200 injured in the violence Wednesday. Widodo told reporters, "We will not give any space for riots, especially those who will damage Indonesia. He added that the police and military will take firm action in accordance with the law. Authorities say protesters refused to disperse as police tried to persuade them to leave, saying that it's Ramadan and they should refrain from committing violence during the holy month. The protesters even set fire to a police dormitory and vehicles. The police finally used tear gas to disperse the protesters. We have more now from Reuters reporter Elizabeth Hennessy.
protests that started peacefully in Indonesia turned deadly overnight. Joko Widodo's re-election as president sparked civil unrest in the capital, Jakarta. The country had been awaiting official results since the April 17 election. Soon after, supporters of Widodo's challenger took to the streets. Police used tear gas and water cannon to disperse crowds Tuesday night as protesters hurled fireworks and set private property ablaze. This was the scene on Wednesday. Riot police are bracing for further mass protests. Authorities have said 40,000 police and army personnel were on duty across Jakarta.
Pada waktu yang janggal.
Opposition candidate Prabowo Subianto has refused to concede defeat. He said on Tuesday he believes there'd been widespread cheating in the polls and was making legal efforts to, quote, defend the mandate of the people. An election supervisory agency said there was a lack of evidence to support claims of systematic cheating, and independent observers have said the poll was free and fair. The result released by the General Election Commission gave Widodo more than 55% of the votes. Some schools and offices in the capital have shut this week, as police say they've detained dozens of militant Islamists suspected of planning attacks.
Jokowi, the victory was confirmed by the General Elections Commission. Prabowo, a four-time presidential candidate who is associated with the traditional political elite and hardline and plans to challenge the election in the Constitutional Court Thursday. He alleged massive fraud, but provided no credible evidence of that. Speaking to reporters late Wednesday, Prabowo expressed his condolences over the six people killed in the protest. Earlier this week, he had urged his supporters to show their support peacefully. Happening now in Asia, North Korean state media slammed Joe Biden as an imbecile and a fool of low IQ Wednesday. Pyongyang's first substantial comments on the 2020 U.S. presidential election. The statement does not represent a formal endorsement of Trump, apparently. North Korea media often lash out at world leaders who criticize members of the ruling Kim family. This is VOA Asia. Japan appears to be shaping up as China's chief rival in the disputed South China Sea because it has a sustained, multi-pronged approach and a unique set of reasons to test Beijing's growing influence. VOA Asia's Jim Stevenson has more.
Since 2017, Japan has emerged as a force in the sea. It works with the United States on joint naval exercises, including one earlier this month that also involved warships from India and the Philippines. Japan has separately sent its Izumo-class helicopter carrier to the sea at least four times since 2017. That year, it took a three-month tour. Japan is helping Southeast Asian claimants to the South China Sea develop infrastructure and marine firepower. Japanese officials don't claim the sea, but a separate territorial dispute with China motivates them to keep a watch on Chinese influence. Regional analysts say Japanese citizens tend to support foreign policy targeting China. At least six other countries with no claims in the South China Sea sovereignty dispute have sent ships into the waterway over the past 3 years. All but the United States send ships too sporadically to cause major alarm in China, despite protests from Beijing's foreign ministry. The U.S. Navy has sailed in the sea 11 times under President Donald Trump alone. China worries most about the United States, followed by Japan, a U.S. treaty ally of nearly 60 years. Carl Thayer is emeritus professor at the University of New South Wales in Australia.
Japan is more northeast focused, but it does venture down to the South China Sea. You can't push Japan around without thinking about what the U.S. would do.
Also setting Japan apart, its government has sparred with China since 1996 over sovereignty in parts of the East China Sea. Jeffrey Kingston, history instructor at Temple University's Japan campus, says most Japanese fret over China's rise, giving their government a stronger mandate to check Chinese expansion through alliances with other countries.
I think there's a lot of concern about rising China and about North Korea. And so in this environment, I think the government, which in a way helps to stoke those anxieties, is seizing the opportunity to build these coalitions, partnerships.
China cites documents going back to dynastic years to show historic use of the sea to bolster its claim. Brunei, Malaysia, the Philippines, Taiwan, and Vietnam claim all or parts of the sea, which stretches from Hong Kong to Borneo. Their exclusive economic zones all overlap the 90% that China calls its own. Militarily weaker than Beijing, the Southeast Asian claimants resent China's use of reclaimed land to build up tiny islets for aircraft hangars, radar systems, and support for oil exploration. Claimant countries prize the sea as well for its marine shipping lanes and undersea reserves of gas and oil. Japan relies on it for raw materials and shipping routes for its exports. Japan's activity is not likely to stop China from operating in the sea's Paracel Islands, a chain it has controlled since the 1970s, or militarizing three major islets in the Spratly Archipelago. But the activity may help deter China from taking more islets claimed by other countries. Our thanks to Ralph Jennings in Taipei for contributing this story. I'm Jim Stevenson, VOA Asia.
Coming up, why cities in many Muslim-majority countries are brighter than normal at this time of the year. This is VOA Asia.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
This news alert from VOA Asia. More than 170 American shoe manufacturers and retailers urge President Donald Trump to exempt footwear from any further tariffs he imposes on imported goods from China. The footwear distributors and retailers of America told Trump in a letter that the proposed 25% tariff on shoes imported from China would be catastrophic for our consumers. This is VOA Asia. During Ramadan, when many in Muslim-majority Pakistan do not eat or drink during the day, sports enthusiasts turn to night games. For years, amateur cricketers in the capital, Islamabad, used empty roads or local playgrounds, any open space with lighting, to fulfill their passion. VOA's Aisha Tanzim shows us informal tournaments now are flourishing.
The tournament this year includes around 130 teams, but it was not organized by an established sports body. A local youth group that calls itself Combined Youth Organization came up with the idea. CYO advertised on Facebook, charged a minimal entry fee, around $20, and voila, before they knew it, it seemed like everyone in the area had started a team and signed up. Most are informal, groups of friends or neighbors from Islamabad and its sister city, Rawalpindi. CYO has permission to use only one playground, for which it pays all expenses, including the electricity bill. But the group is happy with the response.
In Ramzan, many of these people sit in markets after opening their fast. This year, all those who are passionate about sports, even those not linked to sports directly, joined us. We provided them with a healthy activity for 2 weeks.
The atmosphere is festive, with small vendors selling popcorn and other tidbits, children enjoying the games as spectators, and friends enjoying tea. The idea seems to appeal to visitors as well.
This atmosphere and such sporting activities for the youth should be made available across the country.
CYO members say they try to use these tournaments as opportunities to raise awareness about various issues. In the past, they have highlighted the importance of polio vaccination, the dangers of drug use, and supported victims of terrorism. Aisha Tanzim, VOA News, Islamabad.
Mm-hmm. This news alert from VOA Asia. India's Election Commission has rejected opposition fears of possible tampering of electronic voting machines ahead of the counting of votes Thursday that will determine the outcome of that country's mammoth national elections. Authorities tightened security at counting centers where the electronic voting machines have been kept in strong rooms across the country. You're listening to VOA Asia. A new personal home robot follows you around your home, navigating past obstacles so you can multitask while staying connected. Deanna Mitchell takes us on a tour.
Timi is a new type of home robot that uses artificial intelligence to do everything your smart device can, and then some. Timi follows its owner around like a loyal dog or robot butler from room to room.
If you tap the top of its head, it will activate its follow function. So if you're at home and you're on a conference call, if you tap that, it will follow your face using 7 different sensors on this front face. So if I bend down a little bit, it will follow wherever my face goes. It has a similar interface, similar to Alexa and Google. Like you just saw, if you ask it and say, hey, Timi, it will pop up and allow you to make commands or ask it questions.
RoboTeam, the Tel Aviv-based startup that create Timi, touts Timi's navigation system using 16 different sensors: depth sensors, proximity sensors, and LiDAR, a remote sensing method that uses light in the form of a pulsed laser to measure variable distances. Timi explores its surroundings and forms a 2D map, allowing it to remember locations. The robot uses facial recognition to identify and track its owner.
Hey, sweetie.
Hi, Mom.
Timi goes a step farther when it is utilized as a telepresence robot, meaning you can dial in while away, and your face will appear on Timi's screen. This is useful for reading a bedtime story to your kids while on a business trip, for example.
Wow, that's amazing.
The robot can also be sort of a friend for lonely people.
Hey, Timi.
The company's founder, in fact, said it was his own grandma's difficulty using her smartphone that inspired him to create this robot. Timmy's even got jokes.
Why did the robot go back to robot school? Because his skills were getting a little rusty.
Maybe it's not the best comedian, but with all of its various functions, RoboTeam says personal robots will be as common as smartphones within 4 to 5 years. They're hoping to lead the way. Deanna Mitchell for VOA News, San Francisco.
China is stepping up pressure on Boeing Company as its airlines demand compensation for the grounding of the 737 MAX jetliners after fatal crashes in Ethiopia and Indonesia. 2 of 3 major state-owned carriers, Air China Limited and Air China Southern Airlines Limited, said Wednesday they want compensation for their aircraft being grounded. The third, China Eastern Airlines, announced a similar request last month. China is, along with North America and Europe, one of the biggest markets for jetliners. That makes its response critical for Boeing. It was among the first countries to ground the 737 MAX in March following crashes in Indonesia and Ethiopia that killed a total of 346 people. Investigators have suggested a flight control system was to blame for both 737 MAX crashes. Air China, which has 15 of the jets, also wants compensation for delays in aircraft deliveries, according to an employee of its publicity department. This is VOA Asia.
This is Science in a Minute.
Have you ever wondered how much our home galaxy weighs? Well, according to recent measurements astronomers call the most accurate made so far, our Milky Way galaxy weighs about 1.5 trillion solar masses. That's the equivalent of 1.5 trillion suns. The astronomers gauge the mass of the Milky Way with the help of NASA's Hubble Space Telescope and the European Space Agency's Gaia satellite. Writing their findings in a study to be published by Astrophysical Journal, the astronomers remarked that of the galaxy's total mass, only a few percent comes from what they estimate to be its 200 billion stars and the 4 billion solar mass giant black hole at the center of the Milky Way. The study suggests most of the remaining mass can be attributed to the mysterious and invisible substance known as dark matter. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. Remember to get our program on iTunes and SoundCloud. Download our podcast and take VOA Asia with you. Find us at voanews.com. Our thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Nelson Lopes, the managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team of Jim Stevenson, Skylar Ogden, Keith Lane, and Anna Cook. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Enjoy your day ahead.